Welcome back to another episode of The Edge, Cherry's Frontier Tech Podcast with Lutz Finger
and Jasper.
Thank you for joining us here for this live podcast. So this is totally uncut. No, we have to cut it here and there a little bit. And I'm very happy that you're still here with us in Berlin.
Yeah, it's an amazing team. It's very much fun. Fun office. So if you ever make it to Berlin, definitely good coffee is close to the office, but definitely come into the office.
In the office with the coffee.
I don't know about that, but they have an awesome team and they have amazing paintings. So come to the office.
Cool. Today, we want to share a little bit of insight. So Lutz and I, we obviously discuss a lot in our podcast, topics around AI, new frontier tech. We talk with a couple of companies in this area, as you can imagine, actually quite a lot. And then in the partnership and with the investment team, what is happening in AI and what kind of thesis we might have where we should invest in. And we felt, hey, why not share it with you?
I actually think it's super important to share it because I'm now a founder by myself, right? I sit there and I kind of like look at AI and I was like, and I understand that stuff. But still, like, how do you make it applicable? How do you create value? How do you do something good with it? It's not so easy. So structuring the world was, for me, a super helpful exercise as well.
Yeah, we've both been founders, bootstrapped our companies at the beginning. So for us, it's always around, hey, how can I make money with that? Who would buy a product? What is actually the product? What's the problem I'm solving? And with AI, it's a bit different. You have to get the data. You have to run your models. You have to see what's the output. So there are a couple of things that are different and challenging. We talked about it in our podcast. And that might lead to the fact that here at Cherry Ventures, we have a different view on AI and what's happening right now than maybe some other funds. So just being transparent about it, you know, when you speak to us, you get an idea, we have a nice discussion. We love that. And by the way, we're definitely not right. As a founder, when you start, you're probably also not right, but you will get there. And that's where we try to help.
And it gives you, like, we will give you six areas. And that helps you actually to saying, well, look, Jasper and Lutz, I actually have the seventh area. I have actually something else, or I'm in between two. It's just a good way for us to talk about your ideas.
All right, let's go.
First area.
The first area.
So
we kind of felt we should split it up between two main things that the new wave of AI is doing. One is an evolution. So you have workflows in progress, your everyday life, basically, but AI can make it better. So that's kind of an evolution for us. Something is there, but it makes it much better.
As we said in the last podcast, it's nothing new, this AI thing, right? So yeah, evolution is something you expect.
But it can make things a lot better. So the 10x we're all looking for. And the second part is really a revolution, something that is completely new, something that would change our lives. Let's get into the first one. So I spoke about it. It's your everyday life, but it's getting better. So we call this augmentation. It's a very nice word. And the augmentation, many of you have probably experienced when you use ChatGPT or something similar, or even Midjourney, which is an assistant or an interface you speak to, you talk to, and it improves your email writing. It makes me an Oxford English native speaker quite easily, at least on the email level.
That's interesting.
That's interesting, and I can't even imitate that. So what's happening there?
I think the first part is we have workflows. In general, we have workflows. And workflows very often involve us as a human taking one piece of information, remodeling it and placing it again, looking up a document, writing a summary, attaching something and communicating that. And that is always, this interface can become easier. So think about examples. How about instead of going to an online booking service and selecting potential dates, you can talk to it in normal language? Or think about instead of when you want to go on vacation, then you probably have an SAP system or you have a different ERP system where you kind of have to register how many dates do you have left minus the dates you want to go travel. Then you have to send an email to your team saying I'm away. And then you have to set an out of office reminder or something like that. These steps are feasible for you as humans to do. But wouldn't it be better that you're just saying, I want to go on vacation and the computer is taking over everything?
And sometimes it's just taking information from one system to another. You just, as you said, you remodel it a little bit. You put a little bit of your own experience in there. But it's quite repetitive. And some of you might now say, wow, wait, that sounds like RPA, robotic process automation, UiPath, automation anywhere, all these companies. Or if you know how Visual Basic works in Microsoft Excel, for example, so it's scripting, it's automating things that are extremely similar. Yes, but it's kind of the next level, because we have large language models that understand language and can help you to prepare certain decisions, so augment your work and say, there are three ways how you can solve this. There are three answers you can give to this email, for example. And now you can choose one. Or because you've chosen always this one answer, I'll choose it for you.
And the best way to explain this, the automation, like the robotic process automation, is you really learn an interface.
Yeah.
But humans can do actually more. And all of you have gotten a rental car. A rental car that is not your car, different surface, but you still know how to operate it. Maybe the shifting of gears is slightly different. Maybe you have to press a button or something. The dashboard looks different. You still figure it out. So I think the hope which we are having is that when we're saying it is RPA, but as a next step, is to have knowledge of what we're actually trying to do ingrained into our models.
Yeah.
And I mean, the world is so full. I worked for, like, I was the president of product and technology at Marpay. We are a third-party administrator, meaning we adjudicate claims, healthcare claims. And the person adjudicating a healthcare claim is actually getting the claim from the doctor, look up certain information, look in a document whether that claim should be paid or not, enters in the workflow. That's a lot of copy pasting. But every doctor writes different types of claims, so you need that human. All of those things can be automated.
And when we discussed it, it's interesting. Many people directly jump forward and ask them, oh, how many human beings can we replace here? Don't worry. I mean, dear auditors out there, dear insurance claim processing people, you don't get replaced, but your work will be much, much easier, faster, nicer, maybe even, because there's more thinking involved. There's less copy and pasting involved. There is, yeah, just a different kind of work involved.
We are kidding ourselves when we say we're not replacing people. Yes, we are. I mean, come on, we are saying we're supercharging people. We're saying the same amount of work gets done by less. We are saying, oh, we needed 100 people who do adjudication of claims. Now we only need one computer.
Yeah.
That means those 100 people, they have time for something else. Isn't that awesome? No, it's not, but because they just lost their job.
But you're right. It's a good discussion, because what I just said is, don't worry, you just get augmented. But obviously, when now there are 100 people that all get augmented and there's not enough work for these augmented people, you need less.
Now, I would claim, history has shown, that there is always more work, meaning we will have more work as society.
Yeah.
But we have to admit that those 100 people that might get augmented, they have to change. And change is hard. And we also have to agree that the value creation that AI can bring, that doesn't necessarily get to those 100 people. It goes to the owner of the company that now uses AI, or to the VC who invested in the company who supports the owner of the AI. So the reason why I jumped in here is AI has the potential to replace people.
Yeah.
And it's actually, that's what we call value creation. But it's not only AI. Any new innovation, any new technology has changed the way how we conduct our Yep. business. And that has changed job types.
So for us, when we look at it, we look at processes that are pretty repetitive. So the RPA space, obviously, is very nice. And it's just not general RPA. It could be very specific point solutions for high value processes. It's quite repetitive. Required a lot of human in the loop decision making, which can now be done by data. So there has to be patterns, obviously, as we said, for the LLM. So there is something in the audit area. There's something in accounting, in insurance, you mentioned it, even in healthcare, if it's safe. So all these things with recurring patterns, this is interesting. It will replace human beings, but there are good news, and that's the next thesis.
All right. So now we have number one. Number one is AI in workflow, AI with an improved workflow interface. What's number two?
So thesis number two, AI makes everyone smarter, even me. So which is amazing, because I can retrieve information much faster, much better. We discussed that it's language models, so they read language, they can extract and summarize knowledge in that language based on my request, what I'm asking for. So I can search much faster.
This is an exciting space. And the typical word here is information retrieval or search. And it is exciting because the internet has made data more available to everyone. It democratized data. Now, data still needs to be processed and summarized into chunks that we then can act on. Now, LLMs allow us this chunking to make this more effective. If you go to a movie, you can watch for 2 hours the movie. That's the movie. If you have watched it, you can talk to your friend and saying, this is the content of the movie, very short and concise. An LLM can now do this for you, meaning information, the internet made information free and democratized information. LLMs are now, people saying smartness, and I'm not 100% happy with this word. It's more the summarization and retrieval of information is now democratized.
The interesting part is here, it's really around accessing information in a very compact, concise way. Think of it as a summary for a paper. But exactly to that point, and also to the movie, it's summarizing it in his own or her own way, whatever the model is. And as a human being, I might still take a look at it and say, thank you, I searched for this. There's some part missing, so I re-prompt, I try to search again, because I need certain information. Because what you could now expect is, oh, well, we don't need journalists anymore, because it just summarizes all the news out there and writes a nice piece of paper. But then what is the journalist doing? Is extracting the right information, putting it in the right position in the text, so I enjoy reading it and retrieve it in a good way for the specific audience, because the LLM, as we discussed it, it's just a probabilistic distribution of data, forecasting what should be in there next, but it's not addressing certain individuals.
I would say the journalists will use LLMs to be more effective, like they use a keyboard or a computer. Yeah. Now, let's talk through a little bit business models. So definitely search. So anybody out there is trying to replace Google. The other part is anything where we aggregate information. For example, podcasts like us. Maybe you have a tool out there which summarizes us. Maybe there's a tool which reads the news and automatically summarizes the most important news.
Because we talk too long and you just want the very piece of information from this one podcast.
And that exists already. Like there are like sport news or stock ticker news. Like those very often get written by a computer. So that would be one way where we will see new business models upcoming.
Yeah. And think about there's auditors, tax advisors, engineers. So sometimes you have to do something new or something very different that is comes up maybe once every year. And before you would have to read it up in all your documents or remember it. Now you can just retrieve the information out of many, many documents. So you're much faster in your work and maybe even more precise because you don't miss out any of those documents.
And the good news is this is information retrieval is in every part of our society. So there should be loads of good business ideas. Yeah. And we believe that this is not one size fits all. Let's take education. What is the best explanation for a given math problem or for a given language problem? And that's an information retrieval topic, right? Because you might have many different potential explanations. You have only one student, Jasper. So the question is, from all of those explanations for a given math problem, which explanation do you want to choose? Yeah. By the way, nothing big different for a founder who comes to us and tries to explain the business model. There are many ways of pitching your model, and you're trying to figure out what is the best way to actually pitch it now. What's the angle here?
And it's not just text. So for example, I love pictures. I love descriptions. Maybe that's why I was a consultant at BCG. So just sending me a text with a summary doesn't really help. If I have a diagram, a matrix, that's amazing. So multimodal probably helps.
Yes. And to find the right pieces, information retrieval is the one. We had on the podcast LegalOS, right? LegalOS, a typical case. Legal text, find the right part in the legal document to actually tell it. Or we had on the podcast as well, Ultimate, they recently got sold. Yeah, was a good investment overall. Congrats again to Reto and his team. Again, you have customer care information, pick the right information, retrieve the right information and make it easy accessible. So the whole space around information retrieval, slightly different than being part of the workflow, the thesis one, but that's a huge space.
Yeah. And if you combine both of them, and just picking up the ultimate AI example, customer care is a huge industry, it's a multi-trillion salary industry. So we expect a lot of business models coming out of there, because just thinking multimodal, voice can now be easily integrated and so forth. So take a look. We love it. We like to see more business.
And it's not only because you can integrate voice, obviously, what's the business need? What's the user story behind it? But yes, there's a lot ongoing.
Voice is much bigger than text. So.
Number three.
So as a VC, we see a lot of companies trying to solve very specific engineering problems, computer science problems. So these kind of tools, you see them in the open source space, you see them for software, architecture, infrastructure, everything. And last year, same happened as happened 7-8 years ago, and the first kind of AI that I at least experienced, a lot of tools come out. And this time it was much, much faster that they got either be replaced by something from the big models, for example, or they were just not needed anymore. Still, we think there is a new wave of really relevant AI tools that can become platforms for one mere reason.
It's new technology, and it's something new in our toolbox. Whenever you get something new into the toolbox, you need to figure out how to maintain it, how to manage it, how to set it up. And as we saw, certain companies, Hugging Face, clearly stepped up. Other companies, Civit AI, launched relatively new into the space. So I think we roughly in that space, we have quality and training, ML, like LLM ops. We had machine learning ops. We have now large language model ops or image generation model ops or foundation model ops. So there is the whole part of how do you control quality? How do you train? How do you retrain? How do you keep track on your LoRAs? Weights and biases is an extremely good example.
And for us, it's a little bit, and we had a podcast about it last year. You can imagine AI sometimes is a bit like a wild animal, and you have to tame it. So you have to train it in the right way, guide it in the right way, especially when you come to enterprise applications. So B2B, I want a certain output. I want a certain quality level. So I want to make sure, first of all, I understand in what direction the model is heading. So observability. But then I also want to have some kind of guidelines, quality control, quality gates, that the output doesn't do anything bad for my product or my customer.
Now, the other area for toolings is definitely around security and privacy. We know that working with data makes business models vulnerable. Which data are you allowed to use? How do you store it? How do you train it? How can you take data from your customers and train the model? Huge space. We see Microsoft and Amazon obviously doing a lot there to secure the data sets. But I believe there is a wide opening of more opportunities for companies to develop stuff.
Yeah, and talking about data, I mean, still, it's a challenge to have good data to fine-tune the models, even for your rec. So just working on the data quality, storage, we saw vector databases, obviously, which was a huge trend. But just ensuring the quality managing that. We hear that from many of the large consultancies, the large enterprises. That's their biggest challenge to really apply AI in their context.
Now, the next area would be chaining. We talked in our podcast before about LangChain. LangChain meaning the large language model takes one decision and then you plug on, for example, a calculator. You do not calculate it within the large language model because it's a probability distribution. It's just a word continuation. You better do this in a calculator. For those different agents, you need an orchestration. For my own startup, for example, I take a question from my customers and then I make 5 questions out of it. And then I ask the model, then I do a RAG, then I control using cosine similarity, whether this is the right thing to do. Then I merge it and then I send it out. These are all different steps. Partially, these are non-large language models that needs orchestration.
Yeah.
And I think we will see a platform emerging that not only looks on the quality and the version control and the data security and all of the good things from one model, but at which model comes after which model and how do they plug into each other?
100%. Because we see every month a new model outperforming or an existing one outperforming the other models and different benchmarks. So you want to be very flexible and orchestrate them, and observability also comes into it. And we see two directions. One is having a more generalized platform for maybe certain areas or very specific applications of orchestrated platforms. For example, in user interface testing, that might be something to take a look at, where you just
Octomind.
You just control those agents a little bit.
By the way, and a huge, like very cool investment doing user testing. But we just recently looked at a company where we look at finding compounds. Now that is as well a combination of different models because compounds have logic to connect, as well as you can use the AI to iterate through the most likely compound combinations. This is what we saw in foundation models or in transformer models being very, very effective use of those. You need to combine what is logical with the transformer model in terms of finding potential new compounds. By doing that, you essentially have a staging problem. And for that, we expect there to see some platforms. Now, let me summarize. Evolution. First bucket. In those first bucket, we give you 3 areas. Area number 1, workflow. LLMs just make it easier to connect the digital multimodal setups, workflow. Number 2, search and information retrieval. A category by itself, as much as Google became a category by itself. Loads of things are happening there because information retrieval is so core to whatever we do in our knowledge work. And area number 3 is we have way more models, we have way more complexity, we have way more structure. Let's bring all those tools together. These are AI tools. So these are the 3 areas in the evolution part.
All right. So now we come to revolution.
Revolution.
And obviously, with revolution, it's a little bit, you hope for it, it might not happen, but we think there's a huge chance this could happen. We had, when we started our little podcast series, we had a big discussion in one podcast about the interface. So we just enforcing this idea, and we still see this happening, and it can happen a lot out there. And what does interface mean? It's your personalized access to information, consumption of information in a much lighter, more natural, nicer way than you had it before. If you compare it to steps in the past, the first computers were just a lot of, you know, you would pull levers, you would press maybe even buttons at some point in time. Then you had the keyboard, but then there was this mobile interface revolution where you would access information everywhere you are. I think you gave the example of Google Maps existed before mobile, and then you would print out Google Maps and run around with the printout. So that wasn't necessary. So it opened up a lot of new business models. At Cherry, we invested in Flixbus. So you had these buses that you can just hop on and book a bus. Or we invested in Zalando, which gives you access to shoes, clothing from your home place, and you don't have to go to the store anymore. This could happen again now.
Yes. The question to all of you is, having this capability, what's now actually feasible, right? As the phone was invented, people actually used it initially to listen to music. And only later people figured out, hey, we can do other things with the phone as well. Listening to concert halls in a remote setup. But I think here, as with mobile, suddenly, use cases only become usable because of mobile. Here, having a large language model, good examples. You talked about Zalando. We saw that Amazon is now doing it by using all the customer comments and aggregating them. In the future, we will have bots that help you with advice way better than Anna from IKEA, which told you beds are in the bed section and kitchen are in the kitchen section. No, thank you. That didn't help. But really kind of trying to figure out, okay, what is it what you need? What's your circumstances? There are different features. I think people like you like the following feature. So being a real sales consultant, we will see that capability coming up.
And showing you what you need or what you're looking for right now, not bombarding you with too much information, much more customized.
Key here is planning becomes actually very important for this. We talked last podcast that planning is still an issue, but can be overcome or faked by large context windows. I assume that we will see those companies coming up and building generalizable sales people. And that might be amazing because now you actually can say, I want to have advice from somebody who I expect to sell. This is as much as we look for Google to show us a blue link where we're saying, yeah, that is meant for advertisement. So we will go to a large language model.
And you might have to set up your company in a different way. That's why there's a chance that not just any company would adopt this, but just going back to our friends from Zalando, it's not just the web interface and you show the clothes on the website, but also have the logistics in the background to deliver them fast, work with the returns. So think end to end. For example, you could, because you search for a certain thing, the AI could make up clothes that are similar, that don't even exist. And then you click on them. And so I start a bit predicting. I can show you more relevant stuff, helps with the conversion, then advise you on size and whatnot. And then also, again, to the interface one, only show you what you exactly want to see and want to take as a decision. So I don't show you all the buttons. Coming to the SAP example, and we love SAP. Don't get us wrong. It's an amazing company.
Do we?
Pretty clunky interface. And maybe I don't need all the buttons at the same time or Adobe Photoshop. And I just need two or three. So just understanding historic patterns of the users, understanding the different user personas, it's personalized. So I can personalize. I show you what you want to work with right now, not more.
Now, this the example you bring, it's a good one because I would expect that we see different social networks appear. Think about how social networks looked like, right? We had friends and then we shared cats and baby pictures and everybody got excited. And after a while, they didn't. And then we got excited about the Kardashians liking different cats and baby pictures. And we replaced the friends with the Kardashians or a news channel or whatsoever. And now the computer makes up those pictures and selects them for us. I think we saw a trend in the home feed, which is AI selecting what we want to look at. First our friends, then the Kardashians, then the AI. Now we will see the same thing in the generation, like the generative part, meaning first this was the pictures from our friends, cats, and then it became the more professional created pictures by the Kardashians. And now it becomes the more professional pictures created by AI.
And importantly, we see this trend coming in consumer first for several reasons, and there will be a podcast about it, but then going into the enterprise, because usually those interfaces happen more with consumers, at least what we saw in the past.
Because, and this is a, like you might wonder what's here, the workflow discussion. The workflow is enterprises. Integrate into the workflow because most of us people suffer through workflows because they get paid essentially. So making a workflow smoother is one thing. However, being able to directly communicate in natural language with a computer will change the way how we consumers interact. And let me make this very clear, because this is a distinction I see very often people getting mixed up, in my view, mixed up, and I don't want to judge anybody. But if you come to us and saying, I have an interface where you can talk to your favorite charting application, Lookout, Tableau, whatsoever, you write it, and out of what you write about your text, I want to see sales figures from the last 3 years compared to the temperature rise on the North Pole. And we convert this into SQL, and then we send it over to your favorite application, be it Tableau, Looker, you name it. Then it's a workflow. Because why would this be so amazing that you go from words to SQL and then to the application, which is part of your workflow? Just put it into the workflow directly, right? While if we're talking about a new type of social network, we used to watch Facebook, then we all went to TikTok, and now we have this new amazing network, which is your idea, whatever it is. That's the difference between workflow and utilization of this new capability for a consumer interface.
Yeah. And in simple terms, for the workflow part, you can keep it ugly, but you just make it much more efficient. And for the interface part, it should also look quite nice and different and be easier.
Let's talk revolution two, which is creation, music or image creation or whatever creation. Like,
at the end of the day, it's supercharging innovation and creation. And you know, you might say, no, well, but I've seen that, right? I've seen the pictures. I've read the text. I heard the music. Amazing. By the way, that we love the music part. We had a whole podcast about becoming the future, becoming more indie here. Or Runway, which creates videos. Or
Sora. Amazing.
Yeah. But it's not just the creation. It's supercharging everyone making innovative things, creating something for audiences. Because again, the AI is using patterns, probability distributions to predict something, which could be a picture, but then it has to be the right picture for the right occasion. So you as a creative out there, you can actually use that to iterate much faster what is in your brain, to put it on paper or on your computer or on the internet, and then tweak it in the way that the audience might like it, you might like it, or as an artist. So to actually make sure that the AI, which cannot reason and plan, you reason and plan for the AI.
Yes. Working together to actually have them as a buddy. It took me a while to work with this dude, right? But I figured it out now, and he did as well. So same for you with your colleagues and whatsoever. That is an interface which we now created, an ability to have somebody who has constantly new ideas. And we had a discussion about what's the cost of a movie production. 500 million for a movie is not uncommon. And we are talking about future of is indie. Boof. No. What is becoming way more easy to is to generate many ideas. And what it needs is good tools to manage this.
Yeah.
The best chess player is a human with a computer.
Yeah.
That's the best chess player team, not a computer alone, not a human alone. No, a human together with a computer. And they need to have an interface. Can that interface being smarter and more effective so that human and computer can go better together? Yes, there's a lot to come.
So supercharging is obviously the creation part. So I get a lot of ideas that I still have to fine tune, I have to tweak in my tools. So that's one part.
Copilot everywhere.
Yeah, Copilot everywhere. And you saw it with Adobe, you saw it with Canva. And now the other part is also interesting, talking about movies or computer games. And we backed an amazing company there that really helps all these storytellers, RPA, game creators to create their stories and a game around it called Vesper. So you should take a look. But it's de-risking the fact that I create the right content for the right audience, because coming back to this 500 million movie budget, yes, I have kind of an idea what should be the movie, but then I build it and create it and then I release it to the audience, and I can't really test much in between. But with AI, I can take individual scenes. It's not as perfect as the final movie, but like with cars, I can show designs. I can test a lot of things. I can de-risk that my movie will be successful or my game or my picture.
I actually wonder whether you can have something like AI-led or probability-led AI-led A-B tests, right? That you kind of test storylines with your large language model and saying, where in this probability distribution does it fall in terms of good or bad? Like, what would you give? We are not there yet because those models would need a completely different training set if this is even feasible. But I'm just throwing out ideas. We have a new interface, the same value which we are creating by having a new interface, that was the last thesis, now needs management between human and the computer and for the managing the creative part.
Yeah. And we love to see a lot there. This is really, really cool. All right. Number three in the revolution stage, we think there is a comeback of hardware. And we're saying that from obviously a VC perspective, where it's always hardware. I don't know. It takes a long time. It's difficult. What happens now is that AI, the new wave of AI, can actually make hardware really, really smart. So one thing is, and we will see this happen more and more, there are iPhones coming with AI, Samsung phones. We see chips on the edge where these models that have been trained get compressed so they can actually fit into those chips. And why is this important? Because again, as we said, for the workflow thesis discussion, you can now augment decision making. You can have information retrieval in a very efficient way. And isn't that amazing if you think of robots walking around and understanding their environment,
making decisions? Yes, like the whole idea of measuring on the edge and operating on the edge. I used to work for CERN, the high energy physics laboratory between Switzerland and France. An amazing place. It creates so much information that you actually on the edge have to condense the information and find information retrieval, the right information. Now, we have a similar thing if you use your like normal watch and you kind of measure pulse, activity, whatsoever. That's a device. You shine light on your skin. You take on sensoric data and you're trying to predict and move.
They already put it into rings, by the way.
Yes, they put it into rings. I know, the Aura ring. But you can use it for way more. For example, you can predict now blood pressure by just looking on your face. Samsung actually started to invest in a company having this in their screens. Now you could actually monitor sitting in a healthcare environment, people staring on the screen all day long. Now they know when your blood pressure goes up or not down. You could do all kinds of very interesting things with it. You can start putting it on electrodes on your head and start predicting dreams. We saw a few papers out there. Much information can be collected, and those will happen on a chip light on the edge space.
You don't even have to send it into the cloud. You can take local decisions. You can retrieve the right data, send it to somewhere. By the way, if anyone wants to measure our blood pressure and put it in the comments, feel free to do so. Would be interesting. But again, this enables application, very different hardware application. Could be in production. We said robotics, cars are interesting, planes are interesting, drones. So just make everything smarter out there that is based on metal or aluminum, carbon.
So here they are, our second set of three theses. So it's a whole bucket of what we call revolution because it's a leap jump. And what we had is a different interface. A different interface might create services that are not evolution, that are not an extension of a workflow, that are only enabled because now suddenly you can talk to a computer like we talk to each other. Second part is that we believe the whole creativity is supercharged and that needs a management between the computer and us. And the third area is because we have now this new processing power, we believe there is a whole new suite of applications which will work on the edge with metal to trying to improve decision making. That doesn't have to be generative AI, by far not, right? Many of those cases which we discussed here, in our six areas are not necessarily generative AI. It is a combination of AI, foundation models, fast computing that we can use in order to make the world a better place.
So thanks everyone for listening. We will give you a write-up of all the thesis. We will have some content pieces around it so you can also read this up. It was amazing to meet with you in person. Next one is either New York or San Francisco, Mountain View.
Maybe London.
Maybe London. We have a very nice office in London. Feel free to come by.
We see you around. Talk to us. Let us know your ideas. We count on you.
Thank you.